This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. I'm Poonam Verma. Is AI going to take over? Well, I'm a little bit nervous because I spoke to Kevin Sebastian, our tech commentator, and he said it is kind of taking over a few people's jobs. We also talked to one man who's pushing women's financial literacy. Life coach Frances Payne has created a workbook on how to set boundaries to prevent burnout, and it's okay if you want to say no. We find out how a new travel app to discover hidden gems in the UAE has just been launched. And our vet, Dr. Dava from Pets Pavilion in Abu Dhabi, is here to answer all your pet questions. Well, it's time for a little bit of tech talk. And the person in the know is Kevin Sebastian. He is our tech commentator, also known in his spare time as a Jedi Master. What does a Jedi Master do, Kevin?
A Jedi Master is one who's very patient and learns the ways of the Force.
Ooh, well, you're going to teach us the ways of AI today, I hear, and all this tech stuff that's going on, which is usually goes over my head. So let's start off. What is going on with AI? Because it is being part of our lives in a big time. It's creeping its way in. Makes me nervous, makes quite a few people nervous. Elon Musk has his own opinion too, so tell me more.
Yeah, if Elon Musk, the person that everyone is not very happy with right now, is telling you to pause training on AI, then clearly there's something really going very wrong. Well, it depends on whose perspective you're asking.
Yeah.
So right now there's a new AI called GPT. We all know about ChatGPT, which we've discussed very extensively in the past. So we now have a new model called GPT-4. Which, if anyone who uses Bing Search or uses Microsoft Search, they actually have access to this, and it's free to use, and it's scarily accurate. I have actually used it, and it's given me information. It's drafted. It's actually done my work in record time, which is a very scary thing. And I actually have an anecdote to share about this because I have a friend who has a friend who actually lost their job. Well, not their full-time job, but they actually had a full-time job being a social media writer.
Mm.
And now the company decided to hire ChatGPT for free and cut them out. So they don't actually have to pay for that anymore.
Oh,
all they have to do is input this input, give a social media post for 30 days, and they get it in like in seconds.
This is a problem. This is a thing. Everyone, when the internet came out, they were like, this is great. Look, and I see the effects, the side effects and the good side of social media. And now this, and it makes me nervous. I mean, tech is moving so fast. We can't keep up with it. And AI is keeping up and going over us as humanity. This is the worrying part. I agree with Elon Musk.
We've made movies about this.
Yeah.
We basically said why this is a bad idea. Now, let's be very clear about two things. Now, look, I'm all about like using technology to make our lives easier. However, at the same time, there also needs to be a new, very overtly discussed model about ethics and how humanity has their job security in check. So this is where I stand currently on it. Like, I'm using ChatGPT very extensively for the stuff that I do. But at the same time, there needs to be a balance, I feel. And honestly, I don't think right now we are finding that balance at all, because our corporations, being corporations, are obviously going to find the least resistance to make the most maximum profit right now.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because I was speaking to a friend of mine and he didn't know how to write a business plan, and he did it with chat. And the business plan was perfect and he sent it off. And I said, as students, we could just literally, you know, we don't even have to write an essay. We'll just, the chat GP will do it for us. But they've also having to design something where they can tell if you've used it and you haven't done it yourself. The same way back in the day, people were buying likes and followers. Now you can tell if they are. But the problem is when you create technology, there's always going to be a side effect and a consequence to it.
Yeah, and I think the side effect in this case is that a lot of people are now looking very hungrily at ways that they can improve their industries by using this model. And they're not probably looking at the human costs of this. And I think that a human cost will actually have a massive side effect to it as well, because there's only so much you can do with AI. Like, AI is based on what you input and what you give it to it, and it comes up with things.
Yeah.
So what happens when you start using AI for not very good things? And I don't think we reach that stage yet, but it's inevitable if it goes into space.
And I think the scary thing people are forgetting, especially with businesses, if you think you're replacing human beings and it's making your life easier and you're paying less expenses, there's going to be a lack of human connection. And if you have a lack of human connection, you're going to have a lot of mental health issues, bottom line.
Absolutely. Like, again, we made movies about this. Yeah. For anyone who... What's Wall-E? Wall-E is a perfect example.
Yeah, but Kevin, the scary thing is these movies that were made 10, 20 yeah. years ago, they're all coming true. So, you know, yeah. you've heard of all these conspiracy things going on.
It's almost like we saw into the future, yes. right, the way things were going. Yeah.
Yes. All right. Do you want to live on the moon? Would you?
Probably not.
No, me neither. Me neither.
I'm very, very grounded.
Me too. I like being around nature, but I hear that they're building some more communications there in case we do want to move, right?
Yeah. So Lockheed Martin's in the news, and they're always in the news, but this one's a bit of an interesting one because they're actually building a moon-to-Earth satellite communications network, and they're saying that this is going to help astronauts stay in touch when they make their trip to the moon. As you know, that once, like, communication obviously has a bit of a delay.
Yeah.
And funny enough, they've been working on this for quite some time. They're actually going to start being operational by 2025, and they're actually already preparing ahead. And the reason that they're doing this is there's a lot of push in space travel right now. There's a lot of push in people wanting to, like, explore the outer reaches of space. And right now, especially with the Rocket rover as well, you can clearly see that more countries are now getting invested in trying to basically get into space travel. And Lockheed Martin are obviously being a business, saying, like, okay, cool, we need to have an established communications network. So by the time when that is operational, people can then have simultaneous communication between Earth and the moon. Again, I can reference another movie. It's called Ad Astra. It's with Brad Pitt, who goes into space, and he flies to the moon. And funny enough, the first thing he sees when he lands on the moon is an actual Emirates terminal.
No way.
The moon. It
oh
is
my
a,
goodness.
A nice callback.
This is freaking nice, me out,
yeah.
Kevin.
If you watch the film, and it's very, like, I saw it in the cinema, and I'm like, wait, Emirates is on the moon? And you know what? Honestly, within the next 50 years, I wouldn't be surprised if that happens.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I you won't even be talking to me on the radio in 50 years if we're here.
I'd probably be an AI construct.
Yes. Yeah, they'd have my voice and they'd be 10 times better than me. That's what I can say.
It is a very interesting time to be alive.
I don't know what we can look forward to in the future, Kevin. This is not making me happy right now. Okay, let's talk about...
To be fair, I do like the idea of, like, seeing the stars. But space, as I've learned very, very... very often it's a dark place and it's a dangerous place, and maybe we should appreciate what we have on the planet.
Totally. Just take care of the planet we're on right now. Okay, let's talk about Zoom, because they've got some new features. What's the new features here? Are they going to be following us and listening to us?
Well, if anyone's still, like, remote working and they're using Zoom for communications, as most people are, they have also jumped on the AI bandwagon, and they are basically launching a new program, and the idea is that they're basically using something that converts Zoom into Slack. And the idea is, if you missed a meeting in Zoom, you can essentially use something called Zoom IQ, which uses AI to actually give users meeting information through chapters and recordings. They can actually separate, they have the ability to separate the entire call into chapters, like how we see it on YouTube, and it's a pretty cool feature, to be fair. But the idea is that it can also recap meetings, it can do action items, and you can also, like, say, for example, if someone missed the entire meeting, someone can actually show, like, the person who did attend can actually give, like, homework and say what was discussed, and the entire meeting would be played back, not just as a recording, but it's also integrated with your email and calendar, and it can pull information into a meeting agenda, and it will compose an email draft for you.
Yeah, I think I need, proper lessons with all the tech that's going on just to teach me what's happening and how to use...
Yeah, but this is the thing, it's a very simple way of saying this is, if you're very late to your meeting and if you miss something, Zoom has your back.
Zoom has your back. There's the tagline. There you go. All right. Well, Kevin, thank you so much. I need to ponder on everything you've just said and just check with my check with my boss if I will be replaced by AI anytime soon. Thank
Hopefully
you.
Hopefully not.
Kevin, thank you so much. And Jedi Master, have a lovely week. So in the studio with me now is Akshay Sadhana, the Vice President of Strategy and International Development at the Continental Group, which is a leading financial services provider and insurance intermediary. I can't believe I said that in one go, Akshay.
Well done.
I did well. Okay, Continental, now you're walking the talk and they're walking in high heels, I hear, because apparently you're focusing on pushing women's financial literacy. This is a big thing because I've been talking about this a lot. Even yesterday, we were talking about women in property investment. And I think I need to be educated on a regular basis about this. So let's start off with why you want to focus on women specifically.
Well, thanks for having me on the studio, Poonam. I appreciate that. And that's a great Ramadan reunion initiative. The idea is just basically, how do we build more dialogue around the subject? You just said it. I spoke to a group of women just 2 days ago, and they're not having enough people give them the information. They're not being approached by their bankers, by their IFAs as a group. And typically, you know, if you just look at history and look at the globe, this is a subject that's been ignored. We were speaking earlier and you said, you know, why didn't we learn this in school? Why isn't there enough information about there? So right now, as Continental Group, what we're trying to do is just have the dialogue and just be able to start a conversation.
So you're saying you're having the dialogue. So let's say I come to you. How do I join in? And what kind of dialogues? What's happening? Are they talks, workshops, exercises?
Well, it's all of those things. So we provide financial advice to clients across the region, across the globe. And when it comes to women, especially in the region, there's a little bit of nuance that has to happen. So yes, we are doing talks to groups of women. Yes, we are bringing in these groups and listening to what their needs and their concerns are, specifically if it's just here in the Middle East or if it's globally. Because if you look at families now, the dynamic is changed quite a bit from 20 years ago, where you see multicultural families, they have exposure in different parts of the world. And all these little issues, some of the statistics show that women just aren't involved in the conversation when it comes to, do I understand where we stand today? Do I know what our complete financial picture is? And as a woman, they aren't necessarily, and this is what we've learned, they aren't necessarily having the conversations with their partners or their family members. You know, it's either my dad's taking care of everything, I'm just going to continue to let that happen. That's what you were saying earlier.
Yeah. Okay. There's a lot to talk about here. So we're talking about men and women, and I know that they approach money in very different ways. Our language is very different. And I knew that from my dad. When he would explain stuff, I couldn't understand it. It was bizarre. And I recently interviewed a finance coach called Carol Glynn. She coaches women. And here is how she explained how everything is geared towards making men and women approach money very differently, which is true.
Men are exposed to much more when it comes to money. Like if you look at articles that talk about money, there was a statistic recently I saw where a survey was done and it said 65% of money articles targeted at women talk about reducing shopping and managing shopping splurges. Whereas if you look at the articles that are targeted at men, it's about investing, earning money.
And it's true. I don't remember growing up with magazines that talked me about money, and I did A-levels in economics and maths. Nothing in those classes taught me about managing money.
Financial literacy in schools and the entire education system is selling women and children themselves short. They are not.
But why?
They're not setting them up for the real world.
But there must be a reason for that. Maybe it's because they don't want us to have that kind of power in our hands. Because it would make a much stronger society, but then you're more reliant on higher authorities if you don't know what you're doing, right? You invest more in banks or you keep your money there instead of growing it.
And this is our goal and the reason for us having this conversation. We need to challenge these stereotypes.
Totally.
We need to challenge these old ways of thinking where it's, okay, how can we get everyone involved in the conversation? How can we empower all groups of people, not women specifically, to just have this dialogue and understand what their requirements may be, where the gaps are, what the challenges that may be particular to women or challenges particular to the family, either in the region or globally. And as I said, the global citizen now who has exposure in the US, who has some exposure in the Middle East, who has their parents back in India, all these things become quite nuanced. And it's really, if we don't talk about it now, and unfortunately, the statistics show an unforeseen event were to take place. We haven't got the proper planning. There hasn't been much transparency. And now we are spending time in probate, we're spending time trying to figure out what our full financial picture was with spending money on the lawyer's office when we should be with our family focusing on grieving. So that's a real issue that we see quite often with our clients. And it doesn't take too much financial planning or too much of a dialogue. It's not, you know, it doesn't have to be difficult to get that full picture and to really address what are my values, what are my long-term goals, and how can I set up structures or, again, set up a conversation with the family where everyone's on the same page and they meet those long-term needs.
Okay, I have loads of questions for you, so you're not going anywhere.
Fire away.
So we have Akshay Sadhana, who is from the Continental Group, and they're focusing on women and financial literacy. Let's start with some tools. If any women are listening out there, let's talk, you know, get your life in order and your money from savings, investment, wills and pensions. Give us some basic tips for all of these.
So it's very easy to complicate this, and the universe of investment tools and protection tools is quite vast and quite nuanced in terms of what your specific goals are. But if you look at the core fundamentals of proper holistic financial planning, it's quite simple. What's my liquidity needs? What's my basic cash, my liabilities to fund my day-to-day life with the family? Then what's an investment strategy that I've planned with my family that is sustainable, that is in line with my long-term goals and values? So that's the investment component. And then there's the protection, which is, do I have critical illness insurance? Do I have a legacy plan in place? Do I have life insurance that in case I lose my most valuable asset, the ability to earn an income, my family's lifestyle is protected and they can continue to live a life of dignity without having to deal with the onslaught of drama that comes with not having the plan in place.
Do you know, it's so interesting. We have conversations about the silliest things in life, but these are the most critical things that we are not talking about on a regular basis. So I know a lot of people who have businesses and families who don't have a will in place. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to me.
We see it all the time. And it's, again, as I said, it doesn't need to be a complicated structured will. It doesn't need to be expensive. You can start by just speaking to your family. What are our goals? What are our wishes? How do we want to structure our wealth that leaves enough for the children, leaves enough for the rest of the family? If you don't have kids, what's the impact that I want to leave? Mm. And then you can go, especially in this part of the world, it's very important to go and actually register that. Now, that's a day's worth of work. Speak to an expert, speak to someone you trust, and you can get that in place. And it's just one of those things, if we don't prioritize it, it makes it very difficult to make financial decisions with confidence.
So you need to have some kind of trust with somebody when you're talking to, if you have a financial advisor.
That's correct.
And you don't know them. So for me, I didn't get involved in it. The only time I did is when I had a friend who I'd known for 20 years who's a private investor, and she sat with me and spoke with me. And because I'd known her, there was already a natural trust. She didn't force it down my throat like my bank would have to invest in them. So I felt like she was thinking about me. And then I started investing and I started enjoying it because I trusted her and we did it. You know, you can invest very safely, then you can increase your risk. And these are the things that I was learning. A lot of women don't feel comfortable going to men and talking about this because there is a different way of approaching it. So what do you recommend when that happens?
And I think you hit the nail on the head. It's finding someone that you trust, that you believe has your best interests in mind. Now, we can overthink this. We can go interview 50 financial advisors, speak to five banks. The point is, you don't overthink it. Start somewhere. Start small. Build the relationship. Over time, if you need to pivot, if you need to move to another advisor, you will learn through experience what your behaviors to the markets are, what your behaviors to risk is. And that's why I'm saying, you know, as a woman, as a man, as, you know, even a teenager, start putting your money to work and see how you behave, how you react. And you give an analogy with a doctor. I've switched doctors a couple of times, but for the most part, I trust their credibility. Mm. They've been referred by someone I trust. And then over time, I've built a very strong relationship. It's the same way with your financial planner. Meet someone who's recommended. And I think the litmus test that a lot of people at our firm use is, can we invite them over to dinner? Can we have them meet our kids?
True.
And if you can, then great.
That's so true. My dad used to do that. You're right. With his like financial people, and they were part of the family. Briefly, culture plays a really big part in this, in our approach to money. And there are a lot of cultures where they think the men will take care of everything. The women need to focus on, you know, go to school, education, and then eventually become a wife, stay at home. And especially growing up in England, we don't have nannies. So someone has to stay at home and take care of the kids, right? And it used to be the mother. And as a result, a lot of women... I've had personal experiences where my friends have passed away, so they're now widows at the age of 40, or they're going through a divorce, and financially they haven't been able to work because they're bringing up the kids. Mm-hmm. I think men need to be educated as well about this, about how to empower your daughters, your mothers and your wives.
Absolutely. And this is why we say the first thing is having the conversation with your partner, with your family members, making sure everyone understands what is our family financial picture look like? What is our net worth? Who administers some of the insurance policies? Do we have these in place? To be transparent about that stuff is a great starting point. And unfortunately, the statistics, you know, UBS did a great report on this, Fidelity has done a great report, and everything's the same. Women defer 50% of all long-term financial decisions to their male partner or the father in the matriarch in the group.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that that's the way it is, but I think what we all realize, and I'm not trying to preach to you or to the market, that we get that that's the issue. Women get that that's the issue. So what are we going to actually do about
it? That's how I grew up, and I agree with you in overcoming that fear and trying to take our money into our own hands and be confident about it. It's a big thing, and I don't disagree with anything you're saying.
And it could start small. I spoke to a group of women 2 days ago and they said, well, I come to the region, I moved in from Switzerland and we all had our own accounts there. That was the practice we grew up in. We managed our own money, but we came here and everything's under a joint account.
Wow.
Well, that doesn't have to be the case. Yeah. And I'm not saying that this is, you know, depending on what your specific situation is, but I would say it's very smart to have your own account.
I agree.
Put money aside in that account in case something happens to your husband. You're not having to worry about, okay, my funds are frozen. How can I pay the kids' school fees? Yes, I have money going into my own account. I know exactly what that was for. I know what the other funds were for. And you can sort of make decisions with a lot more confidence.
It saves a lot of anxiety in the future, trust me. It really, really does when you feel that stability financially. Just going to round up, where can people approach you or come to you? Where can they find you if they want some advice?
They can reach out to me directly. They can on all the social platforms, and then also Continental Group is on all the social platforms and our website, which is cfsgroup.com.
Yep.
But I just have three things that you should consider. Do we have any time?
No, go ahead.
Consider setting up an emergency fund. Rule of thumb is 3 to 6 months of household expenses. I would say in this part of the world, because of some of the intransparency on employment and contracts, I would say a year of expenses in an emergency fund that sits there, that's growing for you, that you have access to, that's liquid. That is a very important first step. The will is a very important first step, and critical illness insurance, which is a living benefit insurance plan. I think those three things as a starting point are the most crucial pillars of a strong financial plan, a holistic financial plan.
And if there was only, if I gave you, let's say, 100,000 dirhams or 200,000 dirhams now.
Thank you.
And I said you can only invest in one thing. What would it be right now that you think is doing well? Everything from property to shares to crypto to NFTs, whatever it is. What would the one thing be to stand that stands out for you?
I don't think I'm going to give investment advice on the radio just because there's a lot of liability there. But no, all jokes aside, don't sit on the sidelines. Whatever it may be, understand what your behaviors are. Don't not be in the market. Make sure you have an account set up, either if it's self-directed, if it's through a financial professional, if it's through your bank. Make sure you have the discipline of investing on a regular basis, that you have something going aside without spending first. My father inculcated this in me, and now I'm doing the same with my kids, the mentality of save first, spend later. That's a very important piece of advice. And if you can build that habit now, it will give you the confidence to set up a very thorough financial plan. You'll be able to make those decisions far easier because you have that mindset of saving first. I have money. I have the discipline of saving on a regular basis. How I then deploy it on either real estate, on sustainable investments that in line with my long-term values and goals, I can make all those decisions. But if I don't have the habit of saving, then it just becomes, oh, what's flavor of the day? What should I invest in today? Yeah. Oh, I lost money. Now I'm going to pull all my money out. And you start to see that the way you behave around money and behave around risk is very different. Mm-hmm. So that would be my word of advice. Just don't sit on the sidelines. Start small, whether it's 10 dirhams a day, 100 dirhams a day. Do that and have the dialogue with your family, with your kids as well. Don't leave them out.
Thank you so much. That's Akshay Sadana. You can find him at the Continental Group. I don't think my brother would say the same. Okay, so let me ask you a question. Have you noticed that you're becoming more irritable at home or at work? Or you feel that you're lacking energy, even if you've slept a good 7-8 hours, maybe you're finding it hard to concentrate. Now, these could be symptoms of burnout. So how do we know and how can we prevent it? With me now is executive life coach Frances Payne, who's created a workbook on how to do just that. Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, and thank you so much for having me here today.
So let me ask you, have you ever experienced burnout yourself?
I have, actually.
Tell me about it.
I've experienced varying degrees of burnout, from the onset of burnout at the beginning, where, as you mentioned, you feel a bit irritable, maybe your mood is changing more, you start displaying aggressive behaviour, and then all the way through to the more chronic side of burnout, where you start experiencing chronic fatigue, lots of sadness, and also, you know, just generally chronic stress is evident in your life. And for me, a lot of that came from overburden with work for several years, and it was something that I was slightly aware of, but not really aware of the impact and how it was affecting my life in general.
So here's the thing. I've never thought I have burnout. Sometimes there's a kind of a different line between, could you just be exhausted? Could it be hormonal? Did you get all these things checked?
Yeah, and it's really important, I think, to do that, to make sure that you have got the right support system around you to find out, is there a medical issue underlying for you? Or is it something more that's really stemming from your environment and some sort of impact, a situational impact that's there for you?
So how did you define the difference between it being actual burnout and not being exhaustion or anything like that once you'd seen the doctor? Because did they say everything's fine, the hormones and everything? Did they say, I think it's burnout and you're just been working too hard?
So I actually found out in 2021 that I have a primary immune deficiency, which can cause things like fatigue. Mm. So there was an element of that for me. But while I had treatment for that and I was managing those symptoms, I was still experiencing some of the other signs of burnout. So not just the exhaustion, but things like overthinking. Couldn't stop thinking about work, even when I was doing activities such as self-care, you know, having a massage, but you're wondering, how am I going to do this? And what if this happens? And how do I solve that problem? So it was really an element of, yes, doctors had said you may be experiencing something other than a medical condition, but it was really looking at the signs and symptoms in my life that I was recognising the balance is wrong. My relationship with work was not correct.
Oh, I know so many people like that. Right. And I also think I do blame this whole 24/7 access on phones, on computers, where everyone expects you to reply straight away. And when I get a WhatsApp, I'm like, oh, I should reply now. And I'm like, but why? Why? It's not urgent most of the time. So that access, we never get that time off. Yeah. You know, but I remember growing up, Sunday would be a day off. Mm-hmm. We don't have phones. You just come to the house or you have a landline number. Give me some of the major signs or symptoms that are definitely signs of burnout.
So again, it depends on the degree of burnout. But at the later stages, some people call it habitual burnout or total burnout. They really are where your personality is changing. You might not recognize yourself. You may be experiencing lots of procrastination, so avoidance of certain activities where you feel threatened, but also in response, you add more pressure to yourself. And really that difference of just feeling a bit exhausted, you're tired, maybe you can take a holiday and you feel refreshed. When you're experiencing more serious burnout, even having a holiday and a break away from the situation, you might not come back feeling more revived and fresh, because you're not getting away from yourself and the issues that are causing that internal burnout, if you like.
So you've written a workbook about how to create boundaries which can help with burnout. So what's on this workbook?
So the workbook is really centering around the fact that boundaries are so important for us in our life, to make sure we have the right structure to support our habits that are good for us from a healthcare perspective. So I like to talk about boundaries as being the gatekeeper for our healthy habits. And boundaries aren't really something that are spoken about clearly. Some of us understand them a bit, but we're not sure where to apply them effectively. And it's really important that we get to understand what our boundaries are. We learn how to communicate them effectively. And all importantly, we're really consistent and we make sure we uphold our boundaries. So the workbook includes some information around that. Also some tips on what healthy boundaries are and some tips on how to apply them. And then an exercise at the end so that people can go through and work out the key points that they need to look at for themselves.
Yeah, we're not taught about boundaries. I learned mine, like, how do my parents react to people mm-hmm. and how your friends, and that's where you learn it from. Do you know who taught me how to start saying that word no to people?
No, but I'd love to find out.
It was a horse.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Tell me more.
So I went to do this horse therapy thing for my wellness show, and it's a real thing. It's animal therapy. And I'm a bit nervous of horses, so I started getting closer and closer, and I moved in too quick and the horse tried to bite me. And then the lady said, she is telling you, you need to sort your boundaries out because you're getting too close to me and I've just mm-hmm. met you. And I was like, oh my God, this is me. And then there was this great term that I read which said, when you say no to others, you say yes to yourself. Yeah. And that changed everything, that horse and this and this statement. How can we start saying no and create those boundaries when we are quite concerned about what the other person thinks?
It's a really good point. And I think we have to accept the consequences that our boundaries actually, you know, they set up for us. So rightly, as you said, you say no to something, you say no to yourself, but yes to others. So there is an output and we need to make sure that we are confident and that we will accept that output. But I think being able to say no positively is really important as well. Quite often people, when they start, you know, trying to play around with the art of saying no.
Say, no, I'm sorry, but no.
Yeah, or really aggressive, you know, no, I'm not doing that. And other people won't react very well to that.
So true.
So I think learning how to say it in an area where you're comfortable, maybe with some close friends or close colleagues, and actually practicing it, it's really, really important. But I know some people say no is a full sentence.
Yeah.
And of course, for some it is. But actually, I think being able to give people different alternatives when you say no is really impactful as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So, no, sorry, I can't take that project on at the moment. You've already given me a full workload. I suggest somebody else could help you. Or actually, what could I reprioritize or move around?
Yeah.
So I think it's also learning how to influence others in the way that you say no.
So, do you have some experience from testimonials, without saying any names, from any of your clients, because you coach them, that you've seen some great changes and what, you know, what they've learned from you?
Yeah, I think there's specifically one lady that springs to mind where she was really struggling in the workplace with the confidence of saying no.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I asked her, well, if you're saying yes all the time to these other activities, you're staying late, you're not prioritizing yourself, what actually are you missing out on? And by asking her that question, she was able to realize, okay, I am missing out on something else. What are those other things? And what else could she be doing with her time? That opened her world. She was able to then think of the benefits of her doing other hobbies or her spending more time with friends and family. And when she started to build those boundaries with others, she was able to then put the time into self-care. And those self-care activities quite often are the prevention for burnout.
And do you think men are better at saying no and creating boundaries than women?
I think in certain situations they can be, because of the environment or the cultures, maybe, you know, the occupational cultures. But I do think also women can be really good at doing it. But from a young age, we're not always taught to.
No, I'm getting so good at it. I'm doing it really well on emails when people say, do you want to feature this? And I'm like, thank you, but that's not for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm getting better. But Frances, thank you so much. Now, if people want to, you know, contact you and find out more about your coaching, where can we find you?
So probably the best place is on my socials. So at Frances Payne Coaching. And if you want to email me directly, it's Frances@francispaincoaching.com.
And that's Frances, spelled F-R-A-N-C-E-S, and Payne is P-A-Y-N-E. Thank you so much. Now, if you love to explore the UAE, especially when it comes to hidden hiking trails, wadis and little cafes that most people can't find, then my next guest has all the secret hideaways. I've been following her for a while and, oh, has she grown on social media? I think I don't even know if she's worth talking to anymore. If she wants to even talk to me, actually. Natalie, how are you doing? Natalie Delande. She is the founder of Off the Beaten Track, which is an amazing page. How are you?
Hi, Poonam. I'm great. Oh, you're making me blush.
But you know, the last time I spoke to you, I mean, I've been looking at your social media page. It has grown immensely. I need some tips from you for the general travel blogger out there. We're going to come back to that. But you yourself, such an active person with the family. Tell everybody briefly how this all started, this page.
Yeah, I think it started in the middle of Corona, so about, I think, 2 years ago now. And it started with a Facebook group. And then actually it went on. Now I also have my Instagram. And it started small and just looking for stuff to do, stuff that is different. More to do in the UAE than just malls and brunches. And people seem to forget that. And I think Corona kind of made people think and made people explore. And yeah, also for us, you know, you do more road trips, you do more hiking, more activities in the UAE because you were a little bit stuck here. So, but I feel even now with Corona is gone, people are still looking for that, and people are still out and about and looking for real experiences in the UAE. So,
but when you say you go off the beaten track, you really do, because I look at your page, I'm like, where is this? How did she get there? So I'm assuming you have that adventurous spirit in you anyway.
Yeah, I think, I've always liked traveling with a family. You know, we were always out and about. And if we travel, we look for we look for countries where we can do a little bit of exploring and hiking. Yeah, I think you have to have it in you, but
yeah,
it doesn't have to be, you know. A lot of the exploring doesn't have to be active, you know. You can look for the little cafes, or you can do road trips, or I think what people sometimes think that it's very difficult, but it is actually, it's very easy. It's just get out there and go and stop at little places and look at Google Maps and get out and about,
So what new places have you recently discovered that you can share with us? Because I know there's probably stuff that you don't want to tell anybody about, because I kind of do that. If I find a really hidden spot, I'm really particular who I tell.
It is always a dilemma of me, and I'm trying to be very careful. Like, if the hikes are on Wikiloc and if they're well known, I do share locations. But yeah, there's a few spots which you cannot share because they're close to local farmers, or because they're close to, you know, because it's going to get spoiled by trash. So you always have to be very mindful of, do I share this? Do I not share this?
That's good. You're thinking about it in the right way. I just don't want to share it because I want it all to myself. You're thinking about sustainability.
In a way, yeah.
That's the difference between you and me, Natalie.
No. It's like, because my following has grown a lot, you know, you have to keep that in mind always. Like, is this the right thing to share it? Because it's not like I'm sharing it with a few people. I'm sharing it with everyone. So for a few locations, you have to be very mindful, and you might maybe better not share it. But there is a lot of things to do, you know, a lot of wadis, a lot of hikes, which are very well known. I've done a few hikes recently, mostly repeats of old hikes. But because it was so green, you know, it was different. You know, it was different than the first time you did it or when you did it last season. So, a place that I find very nice, it's not a hike, but it's a new place. It's in Abu Dhabi. It's called the Abrahamic Family House. And I think especially now in Ramadan, it is such a nice place to visit and to reflect a little bit. That's what does it to me, because I visited the first day of Ramadan. It was very quiet, and it's a place, it has the three religions. So it has a mosque, it has a Catholic church, and it has a synagogue. And it's, for me, it just is everything that the UAE stands for. You know, it's all about peaceful coexistence of the different cultures that we have here. and of the different religions. It's all about tolerance. Mm. It was so inspiring to be there. And I think in Ramadan, I think it's a nice place to visit.
I've seen pictures of it, and a friend of mine went there. When you get there, is it quite a peaceful feeling when you're there?
Yes. So, yeah, very. I found it, you know, you have a garden upstairs where you look through the, you can see the tree, the church and the synagogue and the mosque. And also the design, the architecture. It's just, I went on a weekday, so maybe it's different than on a weekend.
And you can go into the mosque, the synagogue and the church.
Yes, you can visit them all. So you can either book a tour. So it's the entrance, which is another nice thing. The entrance is free. Mm. You can either book a tour, which is also free, or you can just wander on your own. That's what I did.
It's amazing.
Yeah, you can visit the three places.
Don't they have like an education center there, or some kind of center for teachings as well?
Yeah, so they do have like a welcoming center, and I think the tours are there. I think you can maybe organize tours. They teach you about tolerance. They also have a shop, and they have a little cafe, which to my surprise was even open on Ramadan. So for me, it was a pleasant surprise. You know, I didn't expect much, but the mosque, the church, and the synagogue, they all had something special. Even if you don't know anything about the religion, it made you think and reflect of, yeah, actually, what a beautiful place we live here, that it's even possible to...
That sounds interesting. Yeah. I think it's definitely a nice place to take people when they come and visit Dubai as well. So I'm going to just take a little bit of a break, and we're going to find out about you flying over Russell Kamer, but not in a plane. So, Natalie, let's talk about your little flight over Russell Kamer. What did you do?
Yeah, it was actually my first ever balloon flight over. It was my first ever balloon flight, but most people do it, I think, in Dubai. But there is now a company, and they also do it. They're the only ones, and they do it over the Russell Kamer Desert. And it was just magical, and... Yeah, it was an incredible experience. I really loved it. So, it was very, very early, but misty morning. Yeah.
It's definitely something worth doing, because I've done it over Dubai in the desert, but I haven't done it in Russell Kamer.
I think the Russell Kamer Desert has something special because it's red sand. There's a little bit more vegetation. It was a misty morning. It was a bit magical. It was really, really worth it. I really loved it.
Now, you've launched a mobile application, because I did say to Natalie, can you come on? And she went, no, you need to wait. I've got something to share. Tell me about this application. What is this?
Oh, my gosh. Finally, I can reveal this project I've been working
on. Exclusive.
It's a bit longer than I wanted. But because a lot of people, you know, you heard about my Instagram, Facebook, but a lot of the posts, you know, you post something and then a month later, you know, the posts get lost.
Totally,
and
yeah.
People asking me like, where was the post you post on that, and where is the location of that? So I thought of a place where I can just put all the locations and all the information a little bit more easy to navigate and easy to filter and browse. So I launched a mobile application. It's called Off the Beaten Track UAE. You can download it from Apple Store and Google Store or Google Play, whatever it's called. And I think it will make exploring for a lot of people a lot easier, because there is an interactive map which you can filter on. Oh, I want to do hikes, or I want to do sightseeing or restaurants. You can easily filter on that. You have all the information. Also, like, there is a forum on it, so where people can ask questions or say, I want to do a hike tomorrow in Shauka, I have no one to go with.
I love that.
You know, yeah. So, or there's also...
Can I get someone to give me a lift to this new place inside the island? Does anybody want to go with me? I could do that.
So if you can post it on the forum.
Amazing.
I think I was looking on the kind of questions I get on Instagram, and that's always the kind of stuff that comes up. It's like, where is it located? Or I saw you posting 3 weeks ago, but I can't find it. I'm going to Ras Al Khaimah for a hike, but where can I go to a restaurant later? So I think with the map, with the forum, I think it will make it a lot easier for people to find locations, to find people to go with, to ask questions, to ask information. All the information of everything I do is in that mobile application. Everything is listed nicely. You can filter it nicely.
Well, I think
I also work together. Yeah,
I think it's a partners. Great idea. Yeah, who's your partners?
There are a few partners. There's a lot of interesting ones. So it's from restaurants to hiking groups to activities. The balloon flights is
amazing.
Now also a partner. So they offer, they don't offer me anything, but they just offer something to members.
Great.
So I just want to create a kind of informative community, if you want it, you know, where people can easily
access where they want to go.
And it will also, it will lift a lot of the questions that I get in my DMs because, yeah, it will make it a lot easier, I think.
Make your life easier, that's for sure.
Yes.
Also, just finally, just really briefly, give me any tips of how you've grown your Instagram page because it is amazing how it's gone to 46,000 now. Any top three tips that you can give us?
That is the most difficult question to ask because I actually have no clue. I think it's just, it was something that I started at the right time. You know, it was at the Corona time where everyone was looking for it. And I think it's word of mouth. It started with Facebook. I actually have no explanation for it.
I also think it's your dedication to just pure exploration as well. I really do.
Yeah.
It's very different.
I tried to keep also... I hate the word influencer and I hate
me too.
I hate when people call me influencer or
we don't say that on this show. We've eradicated that word. We don't like it. No. But, I did a poll yesterday. Yeah. Yeah.
My thing is like I the focus is not on me. The focus is on what I do and what I see and what I explore.
And that's
and
what I love.
I try to give as much free information as I can for people to make it easy. And I think that's what people like. You know, it's not about me always promoting or always, you know, it's just...
Well, I still don't even know what you look like. I know what waddies look like, but I still don't know what you look like. And I've spoken to you twice because it isn't about you at all. But listen, Natalie, we've got to wrap up. Please promise me next time you'll come in the studio so I can meet you properly and see your face.
I hate doing that, but I will promise next time I'll be there.
Okay, thank you so much, and I wish you all the best with your app.
This is Pets and Vets on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With ProPlan, groundbreaking science, life-changing nutrition.
So right now I am joined by Dr. Davor Jocic. He's from the Pet Pavilion and has driven all the way from Abu Dhabi to see us. Thank you so much for coming on the show. How are you?
Thank you. Very nice. And I want to thank you for inviting me. So beautiful studio. And I think I will really enjoy.
Now I know you're a little bit nervous, but don't be nervous with me. Let's just imagine. I tell everybody in the studio.
This is my first time on radio.
It's your first, yeah. It's that I always sound like I'm on the first time and I'm experienced. Can you believe it? But just imagine it's you and me having a nice coffee. Don't worry, boss, we're not having any coffee in the studio. But, you know, just relaxing. And we're going to get some texts coming in. And you know your stuff. So you know what to do. Right. We were talking about... First of all, just a little bit of a fun thing. The words you can't say in front of your pets. You've got several dogs and cats. How many have you got?
Yes, I have two dogs and three cats.
Are they all adopted?
The cat is adopted, but the dog, we buy. My kids chose the dog.
The kids chose. Yes. Okay. So is there a word that you cannot say in front of any of your pets without them going crazy? Like I couldn't say walkies to my dog because he'd be like, oh my goodness, we're going for a walk. Is there anything that they go crazy about? You have to keep quiet.
No, but we have that little schnauzer. Sometimes they can be a little bit crazy. And then we have another dog. It's a little bit bigger, a little bit quiet. So, and together, both of them, doggies always help each other because one of that dog is not here on the ears. It's daft. So then other dog help if he hears something or something. So in cooperation is beautiful to see how the cooperation together.
Oh, that's sweet. So he knows that there's an issue, so he helps him out. Yes. How long have they been together, these dogs?
So it's about eight years long.
That's interesting. We have a text coming in actually about somebody who's talking about having a dog where one's passed away. So we're going to go through our texts and make sure you start sending them on 4001. Now we're going to start off with Tim. He says he's found a little white bump near the inner eyelid of his dog, and it looks like a pimple. So he noticed it today. There's no pain. There's no discharge. The dog isn't rubbing it. Should he be worried?
So first of all, it's be perfectly to somebody to see that one. So it can be a lot of things. It can be from the walking, the dog get some injury or some catty scratch, or they can be some allergic problems. So for that one, it should to bring to the vet to see first of all, because there can be a lot of things, even we don't see that one. So
okay,
it's better to see some professional that can completely to see what is it.
Okay. So Jessica says one of my dog's paws is swollen on the front right paw. So she noticed it was limping a little bit. Obviously, mm-hmm. there's no obvious injuries to the toes, nails or the pad. It's a little bit red between the toes, but she does get contact dermatitis due to mm-hmm. seasonal allergies. Mm-hmm. But it's never been swollen, and that usually involves wounds, and she doesn't see any right now. So she said she'll walk on it and has not whined or complained or indicated there was an issue. What do you think that could be?
Mm-hmm. Okay, first of all, we need to see what is it. If it's really contact dermatitis, so we need... First, we need to see that wound and to discuss. But if it's a little bit swollen outside, so they can be mixed with something. They can be some kind of the injury. Mm-hmm. So first of all, we need to see that one, because you know, she know that dog have contact dermatitis, but we need to do completely exam. Sometimes we need to do the example, the X-ray, to see if it's what is inside. Maybe it's some damage inside. So in any of that case, it's good to see the doctors to prescribe good treatment, or we will see if they prescribe some ointment to put in that contact area, or maybe it's some problem inside. But for all of them, it will be good to see the doctors what's happened inside.
Okay. What kind of things are you seeing coming in the clinic recently? Is there anything that's been quite unusual that you've seen with any of your little pet clients?
Unusual, you know... For our business, it's so a lot of things. You know, I have 25 years of experience. I'm so sad why I didn't write all of that. So I can write so big book what I
really
saw, what I see.
What's been one of the craziest things that you've seen that you're like, wow, I didn't know this could happen to a pet?
You know, I told you something. We have very difficult moment. So sometimes everybody get hand from that animals, you know, but... If you push all your energy and you feel, you feel that you will help the animals, even from the very hard diseases. And when you finally try the way to help animals, and when the animals come to the clinic, and when they run to you and try to licking and almost want to say, "Okay, thank you for helping me." So that moments, no, any money can change. This is the moments. Because we are the vet and we are living for. So it's many of that moments, you know. Even the animals could start to be aggressive.
That's what I was about to say. What about those moments?
So if you have, example, animals that only owners can touch. Hmm. Example, if you save the lives, animals know that one. So you cannot lie to animals. Animals
will
know.
They're so intuitive.
Yes. So you cannot smile artificial for the animals. Hmm. You know, if you like or don't like. Hmm. So
exactly.
This is Pets and Vets on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With ProPlan.
So Amit has just sent in a question, Doctor, and has said, I found a little cat. Is there any way that you can kind of tell the exact age or the approximate age of my cat? Like, how would they figure it out at the vets? What do you look at?
But so usually, to be honest with you, nobody can tell exactly how old is the animals. We're looking the teeth, we're looking the condition. So we can approximately told when we see, just approximately how old is the animals.
The same way you'd look at like my hand and you can kind of, you look at the paw.
Like that, when you see some people.
The wrinkles.
You know. Of course. Yes.
Okay. So you focus a lot on dermatology. So that's to do with what? Skin allergies a lot?
No, dermatology, there is plenty of things that we can see in dermatology. But in the last few decades, what I noticed that is a lot of allergy that happened, you know.
In the last few days?
No, in the last decades.
Decades.
In the last decades, we noticed that increased the allergy in the animals. So
why do you think that is?
But, you know, it's changing climatic or pollution or something, you know, like in human. So, but usually when we have the allergy, we usually sneezing, coughing or something. When the animals have allergy, we usually see on the skin.
Oh, really?
Because the skin is one of the biggest organ. So, and then usually start by scratching. You see that your pet or your cat or dog start to scratching. And then for a while, if you not do nothing, then on that little wound, that microscopic wound, the bacteria who normally live on the skin, they jumping inside and they make some kind of infection. Because on all skin, it's plenty of normal population, of normal flora, of bacteria or fungus or something. And then we come another circle, because then come more scratching, then come infection. And then usually what is a lot of mistake in the treatment that people giving antibiotic just, and for a while it will be fixed the problem, but then will come again and again. So my mission is, when I have the dermatology problem or some allergy problem, to fix one for all time, to not come again. For that one, we will recommend the first one, hypoallergenic food.
Yeah.
Example, Purina have very good hypoallergenic food. And then you must prescribe only that kind of food, no treats, no nothing. And then we need to see, there can be maybe allergy from environment.
Interesting.
Example, to change the bed pillow or to washing that one. Then we need to include all parasites, if they can be allergy for the flea, for the tick, for all of that. So, and if we really see that is some kind of the strong allergy, then we prescribe medicine plus hypoallergenic dermatology food. And in combination with that, we need to follow that animals. And with so quality food, we can manage that one. And we have very good result with that one.
I like the way that you handle it first in a very holistic way without giving it antibiotics straight away.
Yes, I always love to avoid antibiotic and not prescribe antibiotic when it's really, really necessary. Sometimes the client can be a little bit nervous. Oh, but we didn't still better condition in immediately. I told him, okay, we need to wait a few times, because for me it's much easier to give in the first time corticosteroid, but then I don't want to ruin the health of the animals in the future, because if we start immediately with some of them, in the future we can damage the organism, because, you know, the medicine in one point is good, in other point is not, and all of that resistant on antibiotic, because usually people when see something they give just antibiotics. So I try to avoid that one. If it's really necessary, we must give that one.
Well, I agree with that. Now, we've had a text coming in, so we'll answer it afterwards. It says, can you please give us some advice on what are the do's and don'ts for helping taking care of strays? We found some cats in my neighborhood. We want to help them with food, but we have no idea what we're doing. Make sure you tune in to Afternoons with Helen Farmer every weekday from 2 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.